our conversation with Ricky Horton is sponsored by Rawlings. Visit the Rawlings Experience at Westport.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on Camo X. Time to talk to our best friend in the whole world, Ricky Horton. What's up, Rick?
Hey, Dave. How are you? I'm enjoying being here in the Big Apple. I'm actually up in the booth right now and getting ready for the broadcast as the teams are down there doing their thing. And always fun to be at this ballpark for me.
Yeah, no kidding, man. And speaking of the broadcast booth, it was great to see you the other night when I was up in the booth with my son, Nick. And
yes.
Great to see Matt Pauly. I love seeing him. You two make a great team.
Well, I really enjoyed working with him. He's so easy, isn't he? I mean, he's just an easy to get along with guy and just so likable. And, yeah, I'm glad he got the opportunity with John and Claves being on assignment over the weekend. And just great to have him there.
I know what it means when Claves is on assignment. I don't know what it means for Rooney, but
they have different meanings.
Yeah, I've been on assignment.
I'll just leave that one alone.
Rick, am I correct that you had a chance to talk to the manager today?
I did, yeah. No, we just came from our visit with him and did the manager interview with him. And, he's really kind of bullish about his team. Of course, he was excited about what the team was able to do during the homestand. They won 6 out of 9 games. And, he's also respecting this Mets team that's been better lately. He really recognizes how good Freddy Peralta is, who we're going to see here in Game 1. But I think overall just very bullish on things. And it's, just kind of a fun environment for him as well. When he says coming to New York is just special for him too.
You know who I'm bullish on, and I know it's early, but I really I've only met him once. I really like Haim.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yeah. No. I am too. I think he's got a good vision for what's going on. I don't think he is going to kind of steer away from that vision. I think he's very smart, and he's not slow to make decisions. He's just wise about making decisions, as far as I'm concerned. Every one that he made during the offseason seems to be providing a little bit of benefit to us, or up to a lot of benefit, including Hunter Dobbins, who was a key player during the homestand, and he's going to get a start here in New York. He's going to start the third game, and I feel like we really got something in him.
Really talented guy. I mean, it's fun to watch a guy that's getting his opportunities now, because he's not. It's a weird way to put this, Ricky. I mean, because I know not everything is about Velo, but he's different than everybody but Dustin May, right? Dustin May throws hard. Dobbins brings some of that, but what's been impressive is his ability to make tough pitches in tough spots.
Yeah, and I think there's something about his delivery, too, and I haven't quite pinpointed, but he starts very slowly in his windup, and he kind of just attacks. I mean, he's got a real fast twitch delivery that starts slow, and I think that creates some deception in terms of the velocity, that old perceived velocity thing. I can't say I can measure that, but it sure looks like the ball gets on people in a hurry.
I think that's an interesting thing to kind of expand on, Ricky, because there are a lot of guys out there where, look, velocity matters, but it's what you're talking about, that term perceived velocity is actually the biggest thing. And as an example, one thing that modern teams really value, and I think everybody always has, it's why people like tall pitchers, but extension. The closer you release the ball to home, 91 can look like 94 if you're getting an extra foot of extension. I mean, ask people facing Randy Johnson, who was throwing 95. It probably looked like 104 because he was 6'11".
So extension is part of that, and also leverage is part of that. And that, I don't want to get too deep into math here, but if you're a tall guy and you're throwing straight over the top, like let's say Matthew Liberatore does, you're releasing it on a different angle coming down than a shorter pitcher would. And we always thought back in the day that basically they said they weren't going to sign anybody who was shorter than 6'1" because the ball was going to be flatter planed to home, and guys were going to get a better look at the ball unless they did something to hide it. And so, that's not universally true, but generally true. And so that height can really come into value as long as you're using that height to your advantage.
Rick, if I say, who is the best pitcher you ever played with or saw who had the most unconventional moves, who comes to mind?
Oh, unconventional. Let me think about unconventional, because, when I think about the best guys I saw, I would say, Mario Soto was up there, and also Nolan Ryan, of course, was, those guys were just ridiculous. I would say unconventional would have to be Bruce Sutter, because he was getting swing and miss, And his fastball topped out about 84, 85 at the end of his career. I mean, that's all. And I would say John Tudor was pretty unconventional in terms of his head would go one way. His arm, and I know you love John Tudor. His head would go one way. His arm would go the other. And he would kind of say, ouch, every time he threw the ball because his arm hurt. And yet the ball would float up there and no one could hit it. Now, I say float up there. I mean, he was still probably upper 80s probably at the end of his time with the Cardinals. But I would definitely say he was unconventional because he didn't really ever rarely throw a breaking ball. He just fastball changeup. And he did that for nine innings. Seems like every fifth day.
You know who my guy was from my younger years? Kent Tecolvi.
Oh yeah.
Well, that was Quisenberry, Kent Tecolvi.
Yes. That was that. Anybody that threw with threw underneath, Cecilio Guante was a guy from that was kind of the next level of Kent Tecolvi after Tecolvi retired. But I saw both of them. Of course, Dan Quisenberry was unconventional, and he's one of those guys that was actually a Cardinal closer. You think about the great relievers that we had in St. Louis during an era of maybe 15 to 20 years: Tom Hankey, Todd Worrell, Bruce Sutter, and Quisenberry. I mean, and Eckersley. I mean, we had a lot of the game's great guys. Great relievers. John Smoltz come to St. Louis and pitch for the Cardinals. That's pretty cool thing.
Eck was one of those guys, I think, that would have been a little bit hard to pick the ball up on.
And Eckersley, if you ever want to do a fun little deep dive in certain terms of pitcher statistics, the few number of walks that Eckersley had in his career is just mind-blowing. Yeah. I think one year he walked like eight guys the whole year and threw 100. I mean, then you'd have to assume as a closer, some of those were semi on purpose, but the guy just did not walk. He, from that funny arm angle that he had and the velocity that he had, the movement that he had, he just always threw strikes.
Man, you're not kidding. I'm looking at these numbers. This is insane.
And I tell you, it is amazing. It really is. I mean, you weren't going to walk against that guy. You just weren't.
I mean, he had multiple seasons when he was a reliever where he was less than 10 walks a year.
Yeah. I mean, you can't do that. I mean, I can't do that. Maybe you can, but he did it. I mean, and you would. I mean, I don't think anybody approaches that now.
I have a question for you guys. As you know, I'm trying to really learn baseball after a lifetime of thinking I knew baseball. Is there any sort of a jinx about discussing a player and their possible all-star prospects this early?
Well, I mean, that's a whole nother era. That's not really a baseball thing. That's a jinx world conversation that seems to have no real rules to it. So I think some people would say they don't like talking about it. Others would say they do. I'm typically not into talking about kind of like all-star and, you know, MVP conversations and rookie of the year, only because baseball has a way of changing so quickly that you just don't. I don't think about it from a metaphysical point of view that it's going to jinx him, but I think about it from a realistic point of view that, you know, there's a lot of time between now and then. But, you know, honestly, when you think about, you know, all-star people on the Cardinals, you have to be thinking about the right fielder. There's no question.
Yeah, that's who I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
And I'm also looking around the league at – it's been such an interesting season so far. We've had a lot of great teams not playing so well, a lot of teams like our team that weren't supposed to do anything playing very well. You got Ohtani doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
Skeens. I mean, Ohtani, he's under a one, right? Am I right?
He's such a good pitcher and such a great hitter that's had some down moments at the plate this year. But he's a freak athlete, and so is Skeens. Those are the two guys that I think anybody would say that, you know, if you're a real fan of baseball, to say, you know, I want to pay money to go watch this guy play.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have to say those two guys are at the top of the list.
If I had to start a team from scratch, I might pick Miz.
Yeah. That's a good choice, too. I mean, 14 strikeouts a game, I think that's a nice place to start.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the elbow.
Well,
I don't want it to happen, to be very clear. Unfortunately, a lot of the hard throwers, it's going to happen.
Yeah, well, it does happen. And I do like his mechanics, I think, are sound to the point where they're going to delay that as possibility as much as possible. But it is, boy, it's part of the gig, isn't it?
I mean, look, Shohei's had it, right? I mean, Shohei Ohtani's, you know, elite, and it's happened to him. And, it's remarkable to look at where the game is now. And this is why I keep saying I hope they don't screw this up in the labor talks, because The energy around the sport is great. Yes. Ratings are up. Ratings are up with younger audiences. You're seeing the tarps off thing all around the league. That's young people that are having fun at the ballpark, and I hope they just don't screw this up.
You know, I would say, guys, I would go back to every labor negotiation that I was a part of or around, and I was the team representative for a couple of different teams that I was with, so I was in on a lot of those meetings and discussions and all the stuff going on. And I would say we always said what you just said, but I think it's truer now than it was any other time that I can remember. That you know, there's always some momentum. You hate to kind of start over because the year '94 when it wiped out the World Series, that was devastating for baseball. I mean, and it took several years for the game to come back, and only because of the Maguire-Sosa home run thing did it happen. So I think we always have said that, but I think really now it's majorly true that we don't want to screw this up.
I've seen a few people within the sport say, like, okay, but this isn't 1994. You have way more things you can lose people to.
Yeah,
than you did 30 years ago.
Yeah. And we still lost people. I mean, we still did. Yeah. I went to a game. The first game I went to, I'm telling you, there was 600 people at Busch Stadium. I mean, there was no – in 1995, I guess it would have been. I mean, there was nobody at the ballpark. And, I mean, I got a good seat. That was helpful. but we don't want to go back to that again.
No.
All right, buddy. Have a great series. We will be listening. We appreciate it. And we will talk to you on Thursday.
Sounds great, guys. Good to be with you.
Back, DGS 322. Think Tank coming up at 4 p.m. Andrew is in Portland, I believe. Having a great time. He'll be back on Monday. Any other UFers leaving anytime soon?
Not till August.
Okay. We'll talk about that in August.
Is that your trip? We don't have to say what it is.
This one is just for my niece's birthday, I think.
But well, you really confused him.
September, we're going to Cedar Point.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that the trip you're talking about?
That's the trip, yeah.
Tell me about Cedar Point.
Oh, it's the land of all great things. No, it's the biggest roller coaster park in the world. It's in a place called Sandusky, Ohio, which is kind of between, it's just southeast of Lake Erie.
Okay.
Like we're near where Michigan and Ohio come together.
And Six Flags.
You have missed out. Cedar Point is actually the happiest place on earth.
Wow.
If you like roller coasters.
I don't.
If you don't like roller coasters, don't waste your time, because that's what it's all about.
Okay. I just went to their website and clicked on the restaurants tab.
Yeah.
That's all I care about.
I mean, they have pretty good food there. They got a nice hotel on the grounds. Usually we'll like go there. We stay there on a Friday night, which means you can get into the park early the next day. And then you can take a break in the middle of the day if you want to go eat and sit down. And
have you ever seen a roller coaster you wouldn't ride?
No. There is no. The biggest, baddest roller coasters are at Cedar Point. They're the ones that I'll wait all day to get on them.
What if they went straight to hell?
I'm on it. Hell better look out.
are you scared?
Because I feel you're not
afraid on roller coasters.
I trust the engineers. It wouldn't exist if it wasn't safe.
But you could get stuck up there baking in the sun for 8 hours like those students.
That would suck. But I assume that since it's never happened to me in the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of rides I've taken, that I will take my chances.
Just means you're due.
Could be.
Yeah, your time is coming.
It could be, man. But, like, come on. Have you seen some of these things?
You ever seen the thing in China? I think it's called, like, the Hand of God. But it's a staircase that just goes up.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Oh, my Lord.
But it's not as high off the ground as it looks. They shoot. If you look at it from, like, the side, it's, like, 20 feet up.
Oh, what kind of change
things? Because it goes down a hill, right? So if you're looking at it from the back, it looks like you're just standing in the middle of nowhereness. But actually, I think the fall is a little bit less
dramatic.
There's
a bunch of those things, though. There's like, I don't know. There's the one staircase that...
goes straight to hell.
Where is it? What's the big one? It's not the one that Honnold free soloed, but it's in like Yosemite or something. Ah, crap. Half Dome?
Mm.
I think Half Dome has like a little staircase that you can go up. Are you kidding me?
That's crazy.
I don't understand, Wheeler.
They got a Panda Express at Cedar Point.
If you're going fast, it's just fun.
The Panda Express to hell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Auntie Anne's and a Cinnabon. I didn't even know those two brands could like coexist with each other.
Yeah.
Maybe they're owned by the same parent company.
Maybe. Kev, you are bewildered by people who are afraid of slasher films.
So like the old horror movies.
Yeah.
Right? So like Friday the 13th and Halloween and all that. Because when you look at them, they're so ridiculous. They're so ridiculous. The killer just walks. Why can't you just get in a car and go away? Is he going to just follow you? Is he going to walk across the country? And also, like, all of the lines are hilarious. I gotta give credit where credit is due. I saw, I think it was on TikTok, I saw a bit that Patton Oswalt did because he showed Halloween to his daughter when she was a teenager. And she just laughed at the whole thing at how ridiculous it is.
Yeah.
And there's a part of Halloween where it's Jamie Lee Curtis, and I forget who the other star was, but they were driving a car, and they're going past the hardware store. And the hardware store had a break-in on Halloween. And the guy who owns it goes, ah, probably just a bunch of kids. All they stole was a big knife and a mask and some rope and some plastic, like all the murder stuff. And you're like, you're just describing murder tools.
Kids
and you're
love
acting
that
like,
stuff.
Aha, just those kids.
Kids they're, love knives.
They are those old, and I've gone back and watched some of them. They are objectively hilarious in how stupid they are.
One of the worst, my feelings have been hurt. There's a movie called The Sentinel from the 70s. Where it's a portal to hell, Rach.
All right.
And in the ending scene, the people come out of hell. And it was very controversial because they used real people with real disabilities.
Oh.
Yeah. And it terrified me. And so, I don't know, 5 years into my relationship with Maureen, we watch it with our friends Rick and Deb. And all three of them laughed through the entire thing. I was for real like, I don't even want to know you people.
You're some sick people.
If I didn't live with you, I'd never talk to you again. Just how do you laugh at the Sentinel?
Oh, man.
Welcome back, DGS 334. Dave Murray brought to you by the Saliga Heating and Cooling Weather Center. Here's why you have to be on the stream. Because if you weren't, you wouldn't know that Dave and Wheels look like they're going to the after prom.
Yeah, they took off their ties.
And in fact, Dave, you're the only one that stands out. The three of us are all, it's a beige day.
Yeah, we're kind of beige.
Yeah.
We look like we're going to go get baptized in a river.
Yeah, you do. You do.
In my case, a river of sweat from all the heat.
Yeah, it's 89 right now. 2.73 feels like 97. And this is just the start. Yeah, when you guys walk out the door after the show, it's going to be, oh, it's here.
Dang it.
It's definitely here.
Dave, when this does go away in a couple days, how much relief do we get?
Pretty good. Let's just jump forward. We've got a cool front coming in on Thursday night. We'll go back and visit that in a second. And Friday will be sunny, dropping humidity as we go through the day, and 85 degrees on Friday.
It's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. But until then, the low tonight, 76, not very low at all. Tomorrow, probably the hottest day of the week, though it's a close call to Thursday. Sunny, hot, and humid, a little breezy, nothing more than a pop thunderstorm. Think just a summer day. 96 for the high, the heat index, what it feels like, 105 degrees. The record is 100 from 1953, so that's going to be safe. 76 and steamy on Wednesday night. Thursday, partly sunny, hot, and humid. I think we could start to see a couple of thunderstorms really late in the day on Thursday, but not until then. Windy and 95. Count on scattered showers and thunderstorms Thursday night. Some of them could be strong to severe. You're going to hear a lot of hype about this starting almost immediately, but it's pretty far out there. So let's not get all hypey about it yet. We've got some time to play with this and see what happens. But it is a cool front coming into a soupy atmosphere. And then Friday, sunny, cooler, 85. We'll be in the 80s over the weekend.
Nice.
Yeah.
Dave, I know how you feel about things like the Godzilla El Nino. Were you a slow adapter to wind chill and heat index, or was that more sound science?
No, I was okay with that. As long as you put it in perspective and realize that, you know, if it's going to be bitterly cold outside, you have to be smart and pay attention to it. But it's really designed, it was designed for Arctic explorers as far as the wind chill index.
Oh, wow.
And what we have to use it for is folks who have to work outside. That's where it's important. Same thing with the heat index.
Dave, if you got a couple of weeks, not like months, but a couple of weeks to go to one of the weather places in Antarctica, would you do it?
Yes.
Mm.
Absolutely.
Kind of surprised you haven't.
I've never been offered.
Nobody asked?
No, nobody's asked.
Let me, I know Ricky Horton. Let me.
Yeah. Why don't we all just make it a DGS trip?
Oh, I would love it. You guys would love flying with me to Antarctica.
I assume you would take a boat, right?
Oh, I don't think so.
No, you'd fly in. You'd get down to Argentina, and then you'd go over from there.
All right. Hey, first Argentina, then. Come on.
Yeah, I can just see Glover. It'd be minus 40 degrees, and he's got the window open.
This is true. I'm like, hey, let's start a fire and open the windows. What do you say, guys? Yeah, I think I'd do okay. I don't think I would, you know, I'm not a polar bear, but like, I love my time in Alaska. I don't remember ever complaining about the weather there.
Well, you always love the cold. That's why you should know.
I do. Yeah. I do. I absolutely love the cold.
I mean, that's a different cold, but
it would have to be stunning there, you would think. The quietness must be spectacular. Wildlife must be spectacular.
Plus, we can get under the ice and see the civilization that's under there.
I'm telling you, Admiral Byrd said they were there.
I know.
He must have been cuckoo for cocoa puffs.
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of people that did go into the Antarctic and the Arctic in those days did go a little cuckoo.
Yeah. Can we return to the concept of the after prom? Did you guys have an after prom?
It wasn't really official, but
let me tell you about ours. So we had a prom, and I graduated in 1982, and every year that I went, and many years after, they had like the Gone with the Wind dresses, like hoop dresses and stuff like that. I'm alive still, and that we did that. And then we would have an after prom, which was an even bigger deal, where you would wear cool matching outfits, and then there'd be like a rock band, and it went till like 4 a.m. It was everything.
That sounds fun. Mm.
Yeah, I don't remember anything that organized. More like we all just picked a place, and you went with your friends.
We did that, and then there was an after prom, where kids would show up at a house, and we had probably... Oh, maybe 30 kids sleep over out on the deck.
Did you grow up in that house? Was your house like the house to come to?
When I was growing up?
Yeah. Was the Murray house where you want to go?
No. Come on. I was a science nerd. Nobody wanted to be seen with me.
Let's go. Murray's pulling out the microscope.
I can tell you this. I was never bringing people to my house. Not a chance.
Ironically, my house kind of was for a while.
Was it?
Yeah. As any house in South Roxana would be, but you know.
That's fun. Your mom liked having your friends over.
She really did. Yeah, I've told the story many times, but me and three of my buddies worked at Losh Farms. It was only like a mile away. We would come to my house for lunch, and my mom would make us hot dogs and Totina's pizzas.
Ooh.
Great memory.
Pizzas or the pizza rolls?
No pizzas.
Okay, those are good too.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, my dad was a union carpenter. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. They saved their money, so they were always fine. But we would each have 4 hot dogs and a pizza, like every day. That's not cheap. Well, I guess it is cheap. It's Totino's and hot dogs.
Yeah.
But yeah, good times.
Back then, for 5 people, that was probably like $3 or $4.
Headlines, Rach?
Yes. I want to start by talking about this pilot with Air Canada that flew 16 years without a proper license.
Wow, that is a chill up my spine.
Now, okay, I don't want to disturb you too much because they're describing it as being similar to a doctor that's licensed to practice family medicine but is doing brain surgery. So obviously you don't want this to happen, and they're not licensed to do brain surgery, but at least he's an actual doctor.
Yeah.
This person was an actual pilot, but he didn't have an airline transport pilot license. And that's in order to fly large passenger aircraft. So How does that happen? He forged it, Dave. When he was promoted to captain, he forged that particular license, and he wasn't caught until last year during a routine inquiry.
It must be easier than we think, right? I mean, we're the people who don't pull major shenanigans because the man has convinced us that we'll never get away with it. Then you got this CIA guy, the one that stole $40 million in gold bars, who lied about everything on his resume and fooled the CIA for like 20 years.
They should have done a routine checkup like Air Canada did.
Yeah.
Have you guys heard the story of this poor 20-year-old McDonald's worker who is suffering severe burns on his face and body?
No.
His coworker, well, I guess, was upset with him and threw hot oil on him. He was terribly burned on his face, neck, arm, and back. And he's basically just saying, like, why did they do this to me? Like, why is this happening?
God, that person should be in jail for a very, very long
100%.
Time. 100%. I agree.
And should owe that person a lot of money.
When I was a donut maker at Mr. Donut, we had a big fryer, and we had two little chopsticks, and that's what you'd use to turn the donuts. And I was training this kid, and he dropped one of the chopsticks in and reached for it.
Oh, no. Ooh, ooh.
Yeah. He only made it in about 3/4 the way on his fingers, but it was just immediately.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
Do not.
Like I guess him. You could say I saved him. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
you know, maybe.
His whole body could have gone in.
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay, Scott Pelley is making some pretty huge allegations against CBS leadership, saying that they pushed for the president's version of events that he says he feels was a level of political influence that he'd never seen in 37 years at CBS. Some of the examples he gave are surrounding Renee Good's death. He says that CBS management wanted to make the protesters look more violent, paraphrasing there, and they went out of their way to include footage showing protesters behaving violently, including confrontations with law enforcement.
And said that they wanted him to have the narrative that Good was driving at the police officer. Mm-hmm. And he was like, look, I saw the video. I couldn't do it. I don't know. I think Scott Pelley's a little on the dramatic side for me. Like, okay, dude. Yeah. But yeah. I believe him. Like, I don't think he's lying.
Yeah, I mean, I say this a lot, but I'm interested to see how this plays out. Like, is CBS going to release the emails or release the instruction and be like, no, it wasn't like this at all? It'll just be interesting.
Yeah.
Let's see. Stacey King, a 3-time NBA champion and broadcaster, passed away at the age of 59.
Man, that's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, he's a former Chicago Bull, so he was a Bull from the Jordan days. He was one of their reserves. And he was their TV color commentator. So obviously, you know, pretty shocking to everybody in Chicago.
Yeah.
From everybody I know up there, the guy's the nicest guy.
It's too bad.
Yeah.
Let's do one more story here. Apple TV, the streaming service of billionaires, became the fastest streamer to achieve studio EGOT status. So only 6.5 years after launching, Apple TV has achieved the EGOT status that stands for winning an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony Award.
Hmm. I like my Apple pretty well. I've had it for years. And I didn't watch it. And then I got hooked on, I think, one of the shows you told me about, Wheels. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. There's...
Was it the Space One Foundation?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Did you bail out on that, or are you still going?
I always bail, right?
Yeah.
You know, I always bail.
It's a great show. For anybody that's not watched Foundation, it's a great show.
Thank you, Dave. We appreciate it.
You got it.
Welcome back, DGS and KMOX. Whoa.
I know. My hand slipped, and I turned the pot off.
Whoa.
How strange.
3:51. We have Think Tank coming up. After the top of the hour with Rainford and Barklage, who we're just talking about, two weirdos who get along and are somehow similar to each other. I don't know how to explain it more than that, but it's just true. They're a match set.
Yeah.
Even though you'd never put them together.
Yeah. I mean, they're a little version of Hancock and Kelly.
Yeah.
A little different, but same idea, right?
Rach, you have a story for us?
Okay, have you seen the latest Kim Kardashian controversy?
Yes, yep. But I really want you to talk about it.
Okay, so after the Monaco Grand Prix, Kim Kardashian, who is officially dating the F1 driver Lewis Hamilton, was walking. It looks like, you know, she's like down on the actual, like, what do you call
paddock.
It? Yeah, and there is a towel sitting out, like on a pedestal, for the winner of the race, Kimi Antonelli. And it's like, this is going to be the towel that this person uses. Well, at some point, she walks by, she sees the towel sitting on this pedestal. She picks it up, and she wipes her face with it and keeps walking. And I initially saw this headline, which was, oh, she took the towel meant for the race winner and wiped her head with it. And I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe it was like a table full of towels, and she thought they were just towels available for everyone. No, it's a singular towel. Sitting on a singular pedestal, she just looks at it and goes, I'm Kim Kardashian. I'm a billionaire. I'm famous. I get anything I want. I'm going to use that for myself, right? That must be for me. The other part that I can't get over, besides the entitlement that she thinks that she would be allowed to use that, is who just picks up a random towel and then rubs it on their face? You don't know where that towel has been. The whole thing is so bizarre and so crazy, and I've watched the video probably 30 times.
I follow F1, and I like Lewis Hamilton. I think he's slumming with Kim Kardashian, but she was evidently just a pill the entire time.
That's what I'm reading here, is people were saying, like, there's a certain person who used to drive F1, and now they do interviews, like, on their version of, like, the block, the red carpet or whatever, and you have to talk to him, and she just completely blew him off.
So she was obsessed with not getting hit by champagne.
Oh, okay. Maybe you shouldn't be down there, then.
Yeah, like, maybe not.
It's just the kind of thing, it's like, you got to know where you're at and
what's
expected.
Well, that's the thing, right? When you're of that privilege and you're born into money and you've only known it, you don't care. Which is why we hate you. Because you don't care. You don't care about anybody else's customs. You don't care if it's for you or not. You're going to take the towel. When they were walking around, they just blasted, their whole entourage just blasted through an interview that was being done in Europe. Like, they were just doing an interview. There are two people on there with microphones doing an interview, and they just started running into them, like walking through them, like they're not even there. And then one of the top F1 reporters in the world tried to ask her a question, and the security people just started shoving him. I mean, he's down there with a credential and a microphone. I mean, he's one of the I don't follow F1, but he's one of the top reporters for Sky News, and you just start shoving him because he's doing his job when you're in his space.
Yeah.
You're in where he is.
It's almost like they're horrible people.
Almost.